Welcome to the Curve Mindset. My name's Craig Nisbet, and I'm joined today by Tom Kitchen. Tom, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, Tom, if you wouldn't mind, would you just maybe give a little introduction about yourself?
I mean, Tom Kitchen, with a surname like Kitchen, there was really only going to be one thing I was going to do as an occupation in life, and that's to be a chef. And I left school at 16. Really, no qualifications, really. I went to Perth College to do hospitality and management course at Perth College. And then I went to Glen Eagles Hotel as an apprentice at 17. Stayed there for a few years. I was in London by, I think it was 18 and a half, 19 or something, working in what we call a three-star Michelin restaurant, which is the epitome of restaurants, of gastronomy. You know, your Real Madrid, your Barcelona's of football. And then I went to Paris. So I stayed there for 2.5 years in London, went to Paris for a year and a bit, came back to London. Then I went back to France, which is the holy grail of cooking. You know, it's the place where you learn more and more about, you know, the whole philosophy of cooking. And this time I was in the south of France, which was a great experience for a young Scotsman being in the south of France, living and working. Unfortunately, I couldn't quite live the lifestyle that everyone else seemed to be living. And then meanwhile, my fiance, my wife, she was working in London in big five-star hotels like the Savoy, the Barclay, the Connaught. She then went to Dubai to work in a hotel called the Burj Al Arab, which is a very famous one, which comes out the sea. It's 7 stars, so they say. And then in 2006, we moved to Edinburgh. Michaela's from Stockholm in Sweden, so I managed to persuade her to move to Edinburgh. And in 2006, we opened the kitchen restaurant in Leith. And it was a very, very humble beginning. It was very small and just really, really small beginning. And it's grown naturally and organically over 13 years. And now we have 5 businesses and we employ over 260 staff. So it's been quite a journey.
That's amazing. And I think hopefully throughout the podcast, we'll try and get into a little bit more detail in some of those events. So the first question I had for you really was, when did you first, obviously your surname maybe gave you a little nudge in that direction, but when did you first find your passion for food?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, I've talked about this quite a lot in different interviews, but I loved sport, Craig. I loved football. I loved rugby. I loved everything. You know, I really, that was my whole youth, was about being part of sports teams, you know, football, rugby, squash, tennis, anything. But, you know, there reaches a stage where you realize whether you're going to make it or not, I think.
Yeah.
And I what I did is I started taking a job on a Saturday and a Sunday at the local pub, washing dishes, like just to earn some pocket money washing the dishes. And that's how I fell in love with the industry, the hotel, the restaurant world. Now, it's not like I immediately fell in love with food. Looking back on it now, I think what I fell in love was the energy and the intensity, you know, that team spirit, a bit like you get team sport. And, you know, I would just love the adrenaline of being in a in a busy kitchen, like washing the wee dishes as a 14-year-old as fast as you could, and like the adrenaline. And that progressed onto the guy who owned the hotel was great. He pushed me onto the starters and desserts, and that's how I fell in love with food. Yeah, so it started about 14 years old.
And during that time, obviously being 14 and working away, what was that experience like working in there? Was it time scary? Was it just fun? Did you enjoy it? Did you relish every challenge? Like when you progressed up there from like the starters to desserts to being on the line, did you relish that opportunity?
Oh, absolutely. I've relished it from day one, you know, and, you know, it's like I'm very lucky that I found a job which has been my passion. So in a way, it doesn't feel like I've really worked a day in my life, because it's undoubtedly my passion in life. So you wake up, you go in and you relish every moment, and you don't think about what time you're starting, what time you're finishing, you know, what time's my break, you know, what time's my lunch break. It's just like, it's just what you do, you know, and that's been the story of my career. You know, it's just been a natural progression, trying to do the best I possibly could and work with the best people that I could possibly work with.
Now, you said that in your intro you left school at 16 and you got an apprenticeship at Gleneagles Hotel. Was that a clear decision in your mind at that age?
Yeah, no, and you got to remember, like, I'm 42 years old. So when I was 16, cooking wasn't like sociably as accepted as it is now in this modern world that we live in. Now if a young child goes to their parents and say, "I'd like to go to work in Gleneagles Hotel. I'd like to be a chef. I'd like," because of the way that television has glamorized it, it's socially acceptable. When I was that age, cooking wasn't really sociably acceptable. It wasn't something. It was the kind of thing that a lot of kids left school at 16 and they didn't know what they were going to do. So they were pushed into catering college or the car mechanics or hairdressing or something, And it's a very large spectrum catering. You're the top to the bottom. That was it really. Yeah.
And just on the apprenticeship itself, obviously, and our other passions, we both love our football, and there's been discussions over the years about, the changes from apprenticeships in the 80s and the 90s, and how that was for a young person, a young player, and how nowadays it's the game's evolved. It's changed for the better, no doubt, but obviously, some people say that maybe some of the young players, when they come through and break into the first team, they aren't quite ready. What was your apprenticeship like, and what were some of the experiences you got, and what did you learn from it?
Oh no, I totally see where you're coming from with this question because yeah, my apprenticeship was like it was proper SAS stuff. It was proper apprenticeship. It was volatile. It was intimidating. It was you were the lowest of the low. You had to fight day in, day out. Just for survival. I mean, I've got some unbelievable stories that I won't share just now, but. Just what it was like is, and without a shadow of a doubt, if you think about the old football managers, it's the industry has evolved. Cooking has evolved like football has, the and definitely for the better. But still, there's, like even now, like I think about like you think about the iconic football managers, your Klopps, your Guardiolas, your Mourinhos, or whatever. They've all got individual styles, and I think that's really interesting that you can think about the styles that they have and relate that to football, to cooking, sorry, yeah.
And I'm presuming now, as you said about cooking and the more access to it, and maybe the way it's been glamorized and stuff on TV, has that process now for a young person coming into the industry changed?
Yeah, no, totally. But I think that there's good sides to it and there's bad sides. The good sides is that it's made people really foodie conscious. People, see that they can have a wonderful career in hospitality. They can travel the world. It can open so many doors. But the other side to that is this world where people think that, they look at Tom Kitchen and they think, "Wow, what an amazing! You must have this amazing life." Or it's just been given to him on a plate. Which is, you and I both know that it doesn't work like that. You have to work incredibly hard to get anywhere in life, it's football, whatever. And the way that television has glamorized it, that young kids are thinking, right, I'm not going to be a footballer, I'm not going to win X Factor, so the next best thing to be a celebrity is to be a chef. And then they come in and they're like, "I watched you on a MasterChef. I really want to be like you." I'm like, "Okay, well, see you tomorrow at 7 a.m. 7 a.m. They don't realize the absolute journey that it is to get anywhere.
Yeah, so it's almost like that picture of the iceberg where you've got the tip of the iceberg, which is what everybody sees, but they don't necessarily see all the stuff that's come before it and below.
Yeah, or that great symbol that you put up when we spoke before about success. It's not that straight arrow, it's that wiggly wiggly arrow, of ups and downs and pits and troughs and all that kind of stuff,
Now, the other bit I'm quite interested in is that you obviously spoke about at that stage in your career, you were right into different chefs in search of a bit of progression, and you heard back from Pierre Kaufman, obviously he was the head of the Michelin star, three Michelin starred restaurant. Now, you said before the stuff I was reading that it was a hugely challenging part of your career, and you were glad you survived your first year. So, Can you just talk us through, like, first of all, your mentality at that point of like wanting to go and push yourself even further and challenge yourself and keep progressing, and then also just some of the things you picked up and maybe fundamentals you learned while working there?
Yeah, no, the first year that I moved to London as a young chef boy moving to London, it was very, very challenging because you come from the safe environment of home, and even Gleneagles was a safe environment. Suddenly you're dropped into the middle of London. You're earning hardly any money. You're living in a bedsit, and every day was about survival. And if you add on top of that, like people think they've worked hard. And then they go into environments where they're really working hard day in, day out. You know, it was literally 7 in the morning till midnight, 20 minutes off in the afternoon,
Wow.
and just running all day, doing and getting shouted at. So it was like something out of a movie, and how you deal with that mental stress and that mental tiredness is very hard on a young person. And I always remember the moments where I call them bridge moments. And I talk about this with my young chefs today. Everyone has these bridge moments, and that bridge moment is that when you've just had enough and you just can't think that you can continue. What do you do? Do you cross the bridge or do you go back home and easily, and take the easy option? And if you can just get these kids and myself as well, just someone to push you over. And I was lucky; I had many great people along the journey who have just grabbed me by the collar and pulled me over that bridge. Because the next day is always a better day. Do you know what I mean? And learning to deal with those highs and lows is really hard for young people. And but then slowly you start to see other people having these bad days, and that in a strange sadistical kind of way that makes you feel stronger. And you can see that they're struggling. You say, then it's your duty to try and help them. But that's what it was like back in those days. I mean, it was just the survival of the fittest. But then the longer you stayed there, the more you grew in confidence, maturity, and you started to understand that it was something really, really special about what they were doing in this restaurant. And then you start to put together the pieces of the jigsaw of the philosophy of the restaurant.
And at that stage, you then went to Paris, as you mentioned before. And what were some of the, was there any differences between the two restaurants, how they worked? Was there any philosophies different? Like, what did you gain from that experience? I know the French cuisine, that style's a massive influence for you. So was that a real sort of technical journey for you, or a bit of enlightenment from there?
Yeah, no, it was a completely different world. Not only was it a different city, a big city. I mean, people think of Paris, they think of romance, they think of beautiful architecture. I tell you what, Paris with no money is a very, very tough city. Living in a tiny wee bedsit, but and learning, being dropped into a different culture and not knowing the language. That was very, very hard because not only did you have the stress of this incredible restaurant and the pressure, you didn't have a clue what they were saying to you. And that is like subconsciously, it's a very draining experience. But again, I just took the, my skin was quite strong from being in London 2.5 years. I could handle myself in the kitchen. I knew what they want, and I was very fast. I was really fast as a chef. And the chefs now, me personally, I love it when I see a chef who's really fast. They've got that raw determination, that energy, that sparkle in the eye. Even if you're sweeping the floor, they're like down, they're like, it's like in football, they're on their toes, like they're always ready to go. And I was always like that, and I always had a can-do attitude. If you need something done, I'll do it, chef, no problem. And I love that. I love that. And the French loved that. And they also loved that I was Scottish and not English. They used to call me haggis instead of roast beef because at the beginning they just called me roast beef. And then, just little by little, I was starting to learn the language. And that was really good fun because instead of learning classic French from a school teacher, I was learning like street French. And the French thought that was the funniest thing they'd ever seen. Because I knew more slang than, the traditional French. So it was a really important part of the journey. It was really rewarding to get up the ladder and become accepted by the French. But then I went back to London because it was really challenging. You know, the money was really poor. And I went back to London afterwards, but I still had unfinished business with France. So I went back to London for a few years and then I came back to France again.
And during all of this, the kind of thing that fascinated me when I went back and looked through some of your career was this was all happening at like a really quite a young age. And I just wondered if you had anybody at that time that were going, oh, you're too young, just stay here, bide your time, work hard, progress up and move on, or is the end was the industry a bit more like you came in, you worked for a couple of years, you did, and then you moved on? Was that expected?
Yeah, no, there was different conversations. Pierre Coffin was a massive mentor to me, my original chef, and I think that's often the case with many occupations, is that first mentor is often your mentor for life, if you know what I mean, the one you always think about. But I just had this drive that I wanted this CV that nobody else had, you know, because talking about like Kaufman to Guy Savoy in Paris to Alain Ducasse, it's like Liverpool to Man U to Barcelona, you know, it's like that, you know, in different worlds. And I was determined to get a repertoire of all the different chefs and travel. And yeah, that's what we did. But it was very young, you're right. But it started young and it grew very fast. And yeah, I think it's, you know, it was not, I'm not saying I was the most talented chef in the world. I was certainly talented, but it was really down to sheer grit and determination, you know, and that mentality, that mindset.
So then, as we spoke, so I'd actually just before I go into my actual question that I'd planned down, just when you said that you felt like you had unfinished business with France, what was that?
Well, I hadn't fully mastered the French language. And there was one CV, there was one restaurant that I really, really wanted to do, and that was Alain Ducasse in Monte Carlo. And, you know, Alain Ducasse is without doubt the most iconic chef in the world. He's the most prestigious chef. It was the epitome of gastronomy. Do you imagine there was a restaurant that only did 50 covers? There was 25 chefs and 25 waiters in this incredible gold ceiling plated dining room in the heart of Monte Carlo. And it was just like literally, yeah. And something else which was really important to me and someone taught me was, you know, to go forward, it's actually better to go back sometimes. You know, you go one step back to go two forward. And that was what it was. So I went from what we call sous chef in London, which is one of the head people, to third commis chef in Monaco. So it's a drop of about six places. Just to have the right to say that I was there working. And then in a way that was really good because that allowed you to come in at the bottom in such a hard kitchen and really learn the philosophy of what it was. And it was about the prestigious, like, you know, my job at the end of the night was to make sure that the chef could come along and he could do his hair in the stove because it was that clean. Do you know what I mean? And there was that old proper apprentice mentality. And that, once you have that in your DNA, it's with you for life, you know? And then it's an infectious thing for other people, you know, because you've got those standards.
No, I like that. I think the idea of going back, I think sometimes on people's journey, like we say, they always see it as this continuing trajectory, and but actually within that trajectory, there might be things that you take a different position or have a different role, but the way you've described it there is you just got to see a kitchen from another angle, from a different side, picking up those different parts, which is obviously really important.
But going on, like what you were asking about age, I mean, when I went to Ducasse, I was like 25 years old. So I wasn't a young man anymore. You know, I was going into my mid-20s. If I had gone there at 18, it would have chewed me up and spat me out. I wouldn't have survived. So I had to be certain battle ready, if you know what I mean, to go into an environment like that, you know. So I went at the right age.
And then obviously, as you said, you returned to Edinburgh and opened the kitchen in beautiful Leith, which is very sunny this morning. Now, 6 months after opening, you won a Michelin star, and at 29, the youngest Scottish chef to receive the award. And my question for you here was kind of got a couple of parts, but first of all, it was how did that feel? And at that point, did it feel like you'd reached your end goal or your ambition, the journey, or was this just another step on your journey? Like how did that feel?
No, well, first of all, it was a really surreal moment because my whole world was Michelin, but you know, my training had always been Michelin, but you know, when we opened the kitchen, it was so humble. I cannot tell you how humble it was. I know you've been to the restaurant. It was nothing like it is today. But as soon as we won that award, there was like literally hug with my wife, and then it was like, whew, right, focus, focus. It was no time because people were now coming with such incredibly high expectations. You know, suddenly you were everywhere. You were on the front pages of the newspapers, all the magazines. People were talking about you. The phone was off the hook. And like suddenly the pressure was mounting on my shoulders. And I was a really like, at those early days of the kitchen, I used to run the kitchen the way that my mentors had taught me. Okay, so I was really volatile. I was really like intense and all over the place and shouting and, you know, and I was going through chefs like no tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? They were like running out the back door, running down Commercial Street, running away from this crazy guy. And it was like, you know, my wife was like trying to grab them and say, come back. And sometimes I'd go to bed at night because I had this pressure of Michelin on me. I'd go to bed at night and I'd be like, there's going to be nobody there tomorrow. She's like, it's your fault. I'm like, ah. And so we really, because it came so fast, we had to grow up so fast, you know. We had to, and you know, not only that, we had a business, so we had responsibilities, paying rent, paying wages, paying all the things that you don't think about and nobody trained you for. And thankfully we managed to get my dad involved, who helped with all that. So we had to grow up really fast, and I had to evolve as a chef. But when you're young like that and you're just raw, like really raw, you're like that footballer that just keeps going for that 50-50 with his studs up. Do you know, like, just you're not learning, you're not learning. You know, you've got to pick your moments. And that was a really interesting part of the journey. And then having customers coming and starting to understand yourself, they're coming because they want to eat your food, and you've been awarded this Michelin star for a reason. So you don't need to change anything. You've been awarded for a reason. So starting to really believe in your inner self was a big, big moment for us.
That's really interesting, and it's nice of you to sort of say that when you started out you had a different approach. And my next question actually was going to ask you about how your approach in leadership has evolved since opening in 2006. Obviously you would have taken some key principles and fundamentals from the chefs you work with, but as you alluded to there, that probably as the environment and as time move forward, things change. So how would you have say your approach has changed over the years?
No, it's changed like you wouldn't believe how it's changed. But still inside, it's the same animal. You know, it's the same animal that's given us the success and the drive. But it's changed in a way that it's much more controlled. You know, before it was rules for everyone, the same rule for everyone. That's what I was taught. You know, you're on time. If you're late, you get punished. You know, like, we all get the same days off. We all get the same holidays. It's the same rule for everyone. Now, very much more about the individual. It's about trying to understand people. You understand people that really are really important to you. You know that. You know. So, it's. I've changed massively as a chef, but there always reaches a moment in the world of cooking when it just goes like that. And now, when I shout, they know. They know it's not just like shouting, because when you shout all the time, it's just like shouting at your children or your dog or something, you know, and they just become oblivious to it, you know, and it doesn't really sink in. So now it's very calm, it's very organized, it's like a machine, it's like a machine. But when it's not right, it hits. And you know, it might be my head chef Lachlan or it might be myself, but it's that moment there where it's not right here, you know, that everyone knows that it's not right, we start again. And I love to think about this now. Like, I love energy in my kitchen. I love everything. And now I think about it, like, if you look at Jurgen Klopp, you know I'm a big Liverpool fan, but you look at Jurgen Klopp, I believe, like, I'm basing myself on the way that he thinks as well. You know, like, the way that he can, like, if he's playing Man City at Liverpool, Champions League final. I'm thinking like Saturday night, 120 booked. Like you need to create that energy, that like madness, you know, that's get you through. But on the flip side to that, it's like Tuesday lunch, you know, like the guys have had their days off Sunday, Monday. A lot of them have been partying. They're a bit tired on the Tuesday, you know, got their heads up their backside, that kind of thing. So in a way, that's a bit like Stoke on a wet Tuesday night. How do you get them up for that? And it's like that mentality, like it's like always on it, always on it. I love that. I love that.
No, that's fascinating because I think from what you've said there, well, from what I take from your what you've explained, you learn sort of discipline and you've seen the inner workings, probably like a peek behind the curtain of how these things work from different positions in the kitchen. And then you've said now that, yeah, I need to add in a bit more humility as well, which was maybe something that maybe lacked in those kitchens in the past. And I think that's probably the same for most leadership and organizations and football and every sport and industry now. There is that huge element of the person within the team rather than just looking at the team itself.
But also there's that steel iron in there. Like that steel iron is the fundamental part of that business. You know, it's just that, you know, that iron will never be broken. And when it comes down, it comes down. You know, that's really, really interesting. But we always say in cooking, you're only as good as your last meal, you know. But you can never think, right, I've made it. You can never accept. You never know who's coming through the door. You know, and it's always that like, right, come on, you. Come on. You need to go a wee bit. You know, always on facts. Always just trying to push them that extra mile. And, you know, it's like a good football manager. Just how do you get the best out of them for all these years? Everyone's up for Saturday night service in the restaurant world. A bit like playing Celtic or Rangers, you know. Everyone's up for that match. How do you make sure they're always up for the match that, you know, the smaller match?
No, you're right. Actually, it's funny. I read a quote from Eddie Jones, the England rugby manager, the other day, and he was talking about becoming a good coach. And he actually said, "You never become a good coach. It's the journey. You just keep going, and you keep learning, you keep advancing, and you keep going for it, and you keep trying to get there." And it is that thing of just never stopping. It's always moving. It's always learning. It's always trying to push yourself more, which I think is really, really important.
And never getting into a role where it becomes predictable. I love to just surprises in my kitchen. You know, like I hate people coming to work just thinking it's a predictable day. You know, like, so if you're doing the meat, I'm going to say, right, you're going to do the fish today. Or, you know, I might order 100 kilos of crab without telling them, because that's like, they're like, oh shit. Like, and then it creates that panic and energy. And I think that's really interesting with sport as well. Is like, if you say, like, I'm just playing left back, and you just say, that's, I'm left back every week, you go into the match like just as a left back. You think, you know, if you switch it, and you know, I think that's really good. I think that's really interesting, because at the end goal, we're trying to create something that is versatile and capable of cooking or playing in any way.
And obviously, you spoke it at the start about how you've expanded your number of restaurants, and I wonder then with, you know, like you're saying, your influence still in the kitchen and being there and your head chef like Lachlan as well. How have you found expanding it and then keeping that steel and philosophy going across the other restaurants? How have you found that challenge?
Yeah, no, it's certainly a challenge, but the whole philosophy about expanding has been that the people that we're putting these responsibilities into have all come through the main restaurant. You know, so they have the DNA, the philosophy of what we do. So they know if we pick up the phone. But then on top of that, there's my wife, Michaela, who, trust me, she's like the one that they're most scared of in the business. You know, she's the one that will walk in and say, the flowers are dead. Why is that not being cleaned? You know, why is the table like that? You know, there's dust over there. The booking's not right. You know, she's constantly on it. But then we have other people in the business who have been with us from day one as well. So we're all part of the same DNA, the same philosophy. You know, and it's like, it's a cliche, but you're only as good as these key members that are around you. But it takes time to all come together to really believe in the same philosophy. And the people that go on to open the other ventures are people who have come through, if you see what I mean, you know, and that, so they've got the same DNA, the same philosophy.
And then last question, Tom, for you is what advice would you give to a young person either starting their career in other industries, obviously cooking's your experience, but is there any lessons or key things you would want to pass on?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I mean, first of all, you've got to follow your heart, your love, your passion. You know, if you can find that in a job, then you know your life is going to be so much more enjoyable than taking on a job that you don't enjoy. From a cooking point of view, my advice if you want to be a chef is, first of all, you know, you've got to get yourself, your first job is so important that you really get into an environment where you are learning the right ways. You know, I love to take on a young person who doesn't have bad habits. I want to teach them bad habits. Often if I get a 30-year-old or something, this isn't for everyone, but often the case, and they've worked in really mediocre places all their life, to suddenly come into a professional environment like that, it's very hard to teach them new tricks. So I love young people. So get your first job in a really, really good establishment. Do a good couple of years training, learn, and then use the industry to travel the world, because traveling is something that really opens the mind. And I can see that in chefs. I can see that in people who have traveled and not traveled. There's something different about the way they look at life and food.
Tom, it's
Just
been
follow
a
your dream.
Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers.